Good evening and welcome to Talkin' Music. I'm Allie Lightfoot. The 43rd annual Telluride Bluegrass Festival took place last weekend. The Telluride House Band includes some of the country's best bluegrass musicians and the festival's earliest participants, including Sam Bush, Bella Fleck, Edgar Meyer, Brian Sutton, Stuart Duncan, and Jerry Douglas. KBNF DJ Rob Miller had a chance to sit down with one of these legendary musicians to talk about the festival, his earliest memory, his first paid gig, the best restaurant in Nashville, and much more. Here he is speaking with the Grammy Award-winning musician and producer, Jerry Douglas.
This is Rob Miller with KVNF Community Radio. I'm in Telluride, Colorado. It is June 2016, and we are here at the very, very, very nice condo of Mr. Jerry Douglas. How are you, Jerry?
I'm great. You're here at the Pleasure Palace, we call it this year. Yeah, we just finished a rehearsal for the Telluride House Band, so we're all jubilant that we've made it through that. We haven't done the show yet.
It's great to be here with you in Telluride. This is a real honor for me. And looking way back, I'm just curious, what's your earliest memory?
My earliest memory is probably hearing Earl Scruggs. You know, my dad was a transplant from the South. You know, he moved up there for work. And so they brought their music with them. And when he'd be going to work, I'd be going to school. And even before that, I remember when I was like 2 or 3 years old, I loved the sound of Earl Scruggs' banjo. And I heard it a lot just because my dad liked that kind of music. So it wasn't everybody in the world that heard that kind of stuff up there. Mostly it was, Cleveland was, you know, the big rock stations. Everybody was listening to rock and roll up there. But I was this kid who grew up listening to bluegrass and then got into rock and roll.
That's so interesting. What was your family's relationship to music?
My father had a band, played guitar, sang lead, and had a band made up of all guys from West Virginia who were up there for the same reason, working in the steel mills. And so I got to see them rehearse, you know. My earliest memories were seeing these guys come over to our house and rehearse, you know, figure out songs and arrangements and, you know, who's going to sing what, you know, who's going to play what, you know. And so I got in on it very early on, and I can't remember a time when I wasn't walking around with some kind of instrument in my hand.
What was your first instrument?
I think I had a fiddle, but I fell on it. So it didn't last very long. And there was a guy way back, there was a guy who had a show called Hey Mr. Banjo. And they ordered one of those off the TV for me, and I had one of those, and I could play. I think I was playing songs. In my head, I was playing songs. Everything, I would pick up a stick, you know, and I could play an Earl Scruggs banjo solo, what I thought, you know, on the stick, you know, but it was all in my head, you know, of course. But so later on, it was a little tougher to actually transpose that and transfer it all to a real instrument. But I think because of that, it didn't take me that long to pick up guitar. Mandolin was what I first started on because my hands were small. Mandolin was more accessible for me. And then I moved to guitar, and then my father let me play his guitar, which inspired me to want to play something more. You know, a better instrument makes you want to play even more than you did before.
What was the first time you got paid to play music?
The first time I got paid to play music was probably at an auction, you know, where dad would play and his band would play at an auction. And I remember bringing home a Lazy Susan that we bought at an auction, probably with my money. I think I made $9. And we had this regular gig here he had with his band in a little bar right across the street from an aluminum can factory. And those guys would come out of there, you know, after end of their shift. And there was a regular group of people that came in there, and his band played there regularly on Saturday nights. And I got to be about 13, 14, they let me play in the band, let me play with them. I was, you know, good enough to play in the band. So I think my average pay was around $15 a night. Yeah.
Perfect. That's some good memories right
some
there.
Big Harriet Tubmans right there, yeah.
So let me ask you this. It sounded like being a musician was almost an inevitable fate for you, just in your air banjo at a young age, moving into the mandolin after crushing the fiddle.
Crushing it, yeah, just literally.
Literally crushing the fiddle. But if you were not to have become a musician, what might Jerry Douglas be?
I actually had a fully funded ride to the University of Maryland on an English scholarship. But I also that summer went out on the road with the Country Gentlemen, which was like at that point top of the heap bluegrass band, and that was it for me. I was bitten, and I never, I kind of regret not going to school, not going to university, you know, but I don't think it would have changed much for me. At this point, you know, it's really kind of a wash. You know, instead of being an English professor and being, I think this is better for me.
It's better for all of us, actually. Thank you. So I understand you spent some time in Louisville.
I did. I actually lived in Lexington, Kentucky, because I was playing with J.D. Crow. And at that time, Tony Rice was in the band and Ricky Skaggs and Bobby Sloan. And you know, it was like a bluegrass bomb went off there we all landed there, and it was just a really great band. And I was in that band for all of 6 months. But we went to Japan. We were all over the United States in that summer. And the record came out. It was a Rounder record, and it was sort of at this point people think of it as a landmark record. But it was a huge education and a giant step, you know, in my career for recognition and. And just learning a lot more about music, you know, just took me up a step from where I was with the Country Gentlemen and introduced me to all kinds of things, especially Tony introducing me to jazz. And that, you know, and then that became part of my bag of tricks, you know. And just listening to Miles and Coltrane late at night with Tony, staying up until the sun came up, you know, but it just soaked in there and things started coming out of me. I started to play phrases that weren't bluegrass phrases, you know, but we try to make them fit, try to play them at the right times.
Thank you.
That was Jerry Douglas on dobro, Russ Barenberg on guitar, and Edgar Meyer on acoustic bass with the song Why Don't You Go Back to the Woods off their 1993 release Skip, Hop, and Wobble. Rob Miller spoke with Jerry Douglas at the Telluride Bluegrass Festival last weekend.
So what year did you move to Nashville, do you know?
I moved to Nashville in 1979 and been there ever since.
So 1979, and it is 2016. How would you describe Nashville has changed?
Oh, wow. It's so different. I mean, okay, I'll do it in the analogy of food, using food for the analogy. We had, you know, the regular McDonald's and stuff like that, but if you wanted to go to a restaurant, there were a few old money restaurants over in the west side of town, but I didn't really get over there much. So there were Bill Anderson, this country singer, owned this place, this restaurant called Po' Folks, which, and everything was deep fried. And he made everybody that worked in there talk in a very Southern accent, fake Southern accents. And it was just horrible. And now, you know, fast forward to now, and we're a foodie town, mm-hmm. You know, there's James Beard Award, you know, chefs in town, and they're all over the place, and there's just great food everywhere you turn. There's Indian food. There's all the international foods are there. There was no Indian restaurant when I moved there. Yeah. Maybe one Chinese restaurant, you know, but the rest of it was, you know, we're country folks. We're going to eat country food, and we don't want y'all coming in here with your tandoori. What is that, you know?
So I assume you've become a foodie now, so I'm going to ask you what your favorite restaurant in Nashville is.
My favorite Nashville restaurant is probably a place called Husk, which there was the original Husk is in Charleston, South Carolina, and that was James Beard chef, you know, one of the award-winning chefs, and he started a place in Nashville, and you can't get in there now, you know, but they're cropping up all over the place. There's some great restaurants, and so I would definitely say if you're going to Nashville, you need to visit, go to Open Table and make yourself a nice reservation in advance.
Noted. Thank you. Nashville's also raising cranes these days, isn't it?
Definitely. Cranes everywhere you look. It's like Beijing or you know, Shanghai, you know. But yeah, we have a building boom going on right now. There are 100 people moving to Nashville every day. Wow. And I don't know where they're coming from and or what they're doing when they get there. But I really don't know, but it's all these new people, and I thought, well, you know, and it also changed the music scene completely. There's a lot of a really good, you know, good rock and roll there, you know, of every kind. And the Americana movement pretty much started there because songwriters came to town and they didn't really want to write the schlock that was going on country radio, you know, and I pretty much got out of it too at that point, but... It's become a town full of songwriters and you know, great bands and songwriters, and like Jason Isbell and you know, Sturgill Simpson and
Chris Stapleton,
who are all three sort of produced by the same guy, Dave Cobb. I think Sturgill's done a record with somebody else, but Dave Cobb was one of the magnets, and he came from L.A. through Muscle Shoals, so. So there are a lot of things, you know, everybody's sort of doing a little more research on where things came from, you know, like Muscle Shoals and New Orleans, you know, Malaco, then Jackson, you know, Mississippi, and like the Alabama Shakes. They're maybe coming to Nashville, moving to Nashville, but it's not just a country music town anymore. It's still a country music town, but not the kind that it was when I moved there. You know, I did all the Randy Travis and, you know, all up through Trish Yearwood and Garth Brooks, all the way through all that stuff. I arrived at the end of what they called the urban cowboy scare, we called it. And then when the mechanical bulls and everything, you know, they're all in one building, woodshedded, you know, mothballed somewhere, thank God. And that was over, but, you know, country music all musics are a very cyclical thing. You know, it starts out, I mean, we broke it once at with Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, you know, in a really bad time in the whole country when everybody just wanted something honest, you know. So music starts at the top of the dial. It's like 12 o'clock is roots. Everybody, okay, this is something we can trust. And then it becomes it starts to be shinier, you know, all down to 6 o'clock, it's getting pretty shiny. It gets to 9 o'clock and everybody's going, oh, this, I can't stand this anymore, you know. So 12 o'clock roots starts all over again, you know, and it does that every 4 or 5 years. And the life expectancy of a country artist is about 4 years, you know, for to really dominate the charts such as they are. But, you know, everything's changing. The formats, the way people record, the way people listen to music, what they listen to music on. I mean, we start out making a record and recording the thing at 96K. And by the time, you know, the normal 16-year-old hears it, they're listening to an MP3 that's, you know, 1/11th of what we put in there. You know, so it's kind of hard to know what to do about it. You know, but it'll solve itself over time.
Yep. Vinyl's back.
I love vinyl. I'm a vinyl junkie. I love to smell the acetate, you know, yeah, before the record's pressed. Mm. And because I, you know, when I started making records, that was the format. And then it became cassettes, then it was CDs, yeah, and everybody went, CDs, they won't hurt your ears. Yeah. You'll be able to listen to them for hours and you won't fatigue. A huge lie.
Yeah.
And the best way to hear music is from vinyl.
Yeah.
It's a broader frequency range. Everything's there.
Yeah. Over 1,600 recordings you've been on. Is that about right? That's what I read?
I recently saw 2,000, but I'm not counting.
All right. Well, Wikipedia needs to be updated there. So that's a lot of people you've recorded with. Is there anyone out there in the world who you're looking forward to recording with someday, or you want to do a project with, or anybody?
Well, I'm working on a record. I'm starting a record soon that I'm going to try to, you know, nail down some of those people. You know, I've already mentioned Jason Isbell and Roseanne Cash, and I are going to write together, and Jason and I are going to write together. And I don't know. They're always cropping up, you know, and I'm just, my ears are wide open, so I hear new things all the time, and it's always changing.
Are there any new artists in particular that are inspiring you?
Well, yeah, I'm inspired, you know, like by Alabama Shakes and Sturgill Simpson and Dan Auerbach is in town, and I played on his record, his solo record that's coming out pretty soon. And I played on a Robin Ford record the other day, you know, there's still a lot of things going on, things popping up that feed me, you know, new information that, you know, and just sitting in here with these guys today, I mean, they do the same thing I do. They, Bela Fleck and Sam Bush and Brian Sutton, Stuart Duncan, who's been out with Diana Krall for 3 years, you know, and he started that right after he and I did a 2 years with Elvis Costello. So there are all of these things that are mixed up in there, and they're coming out in different ways.
Yeah.
But just sitting in there with them and listening to them and playing with them, it's, we're all evolving. We're still evolving. We're creeping up there in years, but it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Because we're not stuck in one kind of music. We don't have to become, we're not classical musicians, so we have to play classical music and keep playing that better and better and better. We're hearing that is part of our influence as much as jazz is and bluegrass and, you know, hip-hop and just everything.
Thank you.
about a lazy farmer who wouldn't hoe his corn. The reason why I never could tell for that young man was always well. He planted his corn in the month of June. July it was up to his eyes. Come September came a big frost, and all the young man's corn was lost. Because I wouldn't hold corn.
That was the song The Boy Who Wouldn't Hoe Corn, with Jerry Douglas on dobro, Dan Tominski on lead vocals, off the Grammy Award-winning album New Favorite from Alison Krauss and Union Station. You're tuned into Talkin' Music with DJ Rob Miller interviewing musician Jerry Douglas at the 43rd Telluride Bluegrass Festival.
I want to ask you a question regarding the IBMA, and let me see if I have these numbers right. Between you and Rob Ikes, you guys have won Dobro Player of the Year for the last 24 out of 26 years.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something wrong with that.
Well, you know, and I'm going to ask you an IBMA specific question is, what's your thoughts on that? Do you have any visions of perhaps when something like that, I think you've won 9 times or 10 times, somewhere around there. And do you feel like there could be something like a legacy award then, you know, and maybe that award go to some younger players for recognition? Or is that award right up there with all other awards, and they're just an honor to get? And you,
well, because it's a dobro, I think, you know, there are just not that many people to pick from, but there are, it's growing. It's growing really fast. I mean, Andy Hall should have won this. He should have won that award. I can think of some other people. Gene Wooten, when he was alive, should have won that award. And there are a lot, and there are a lot more coming on. You know, a lot of who are, you know, Rob and I are the household names. We're the ones that they go to first. You know, and Phil Ledbetter is the fellow that's won the other two. But I won it last year because I played more like Josh Graves last year than I did like myself. So I really don't know what to think about all that. In one way, a legacy award, maybe that's a good idea, but I still think it's, as long as I'm vital and I have something that I'm putting forward, you know, and that it's still cutting edge, well, you know, I'm not a legacy. I'm not really going after a legacy, you know. I think I've passed that, really, and so is Rob. You know, it comes down to who contributes. It's a popularity contest. You know, all awards are. There's something you shouldn't take that seriously. As the guy who wins, I mean, it's nice to win. It's great to win, and I'm not saying that I don't think that the people who voted for me, I don't think they were wrong. I just think that I would like for them to take a wide look around and bring in some new blood, and you know, and those guys are coming fast. You know, it's just that Rob and I get the big records still, and we're heard the most, but there are some wonderful, wonderful dobro players out there that they need to hear. Gavin Large is a guy who took Rob's place in Blue Highway. And who knows, you know, it's a fickle thing. People are fickle about, you know, they vote in blocks. It's a crazy thing. And I'm really, you know, it doesn't matter how many times I've won the thing. I get up there and I can't put two words together, you know, and one time I completely insulted the whole room, you know, not on purpose. It was just a complete gaffe. I heard the air go out of the room, so I'll try not to do that ever again. But I'm happy to keep winning it. But I would also be happy and be the first one standing up when some new guy gets it. I'll be just as happy.
Okay, we only got two quick questions for you. Grateful Dead, Widespread Panic, or Fish?
Fish.
Good answer. And, okay, let's put together a band of people who are dead. Your guitar player.
Django Reinhardt.
Drummer.
Oh my God, Gene Krupa.
Mandolin player.
Dave Apollon.
Keyboard player.
Oscar Peterson.
And electric guitar player.
Well, I know a lot of good ones that are alive. Electric guitar players. Okay, let's see, Danny Gadden.
All right, there you go. All right, I'm gonna put that band together. We're going to figure out how to do it. So we're going to work on that at KVNF and somehow, yeah.
I hear that.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Trust me. Well, listen, Jerry Douglas, it's been a pleasure talking with you. And I want to give you an invitation to Paonia, Colorado, where KVNF is based. And please, next time you're in the area, please think about swinging by the radio station and saying hi.
I'd love to. And if I'm close by, you can bet I'll be there.